Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and it's sort of the first day of spring, the 21st of March, 2024, but this year it was a little bit different. It was officially astronomically or something yesterday, but today's the old time, what can I tell you, the old time first day of spring, okay, the 21st of March, and we have a wonderful guest for you today, Dr. Professor Fred Mednick is here. He's the founder of Teachers Without Borders, teacherswithoutborders.org. I have it linked here. Fred is just amazing. He taught at Johns Hopkins. He taught at a university in Brussels, outside of Brussels for years. And I believe that's the way I'm reading this anyways. Professor Emeritus at, I'm going to try to pronounce it. He's going to help me, Verge Université Bruxelles. You're going to have to help me on that one, Fred, at Brussels, okay, in Belgium. Founded Teachers Without Borders, and it's just, and which is, by the way, I want to say is an excellent organization. 171 countries represented. They've been awarded the Champion of African Education Award, the Luxembourg Peace Prize, and the Ahmadiyya Muslim Prize for Peace, okay? And Fred's just a good guy, and this organization he's founded is unbelievable. And he's written a new book called In the Small Places. And I've got that linked here, too, at inthesmallplaces.com. Okay? So you can check it all out. It's pretty good. Please go over to what we do over at ace-ed.org. That's our home website for American Consortium for Equity in Education. ACE-ED.org. Everything's free over there. I hope you and all your teacher friends, colleagues, educator friends, go over there, check out and see what we do. We're very proud of it all. We're proud of our podcast. All our podcasts are over there, etc. And that's enough of me blabbing as Larry Jacobs. Let me tell you, here's Fred Mednick. Dr. Fred. Hi, Fred. It's Larry here.
Hi.
Good morning again.
Good. Yes, hi. How are you? Thanks for having me on. It's just a great opportunity.
My pleasure, my honor indeed, sir. You're a good humanitarian. I got to tell you, you're a great person. And now that I know I screwed it up, tell me how to pronounce that university in Belgium.
Oh, I don't actually pronounce it very well myself. Vrij, Vrij means like free, Université Bruxelles. So you got two-thirds of it. It's pretty good.
Okay, and how did you wind up in the TGA? How long were you there? How did you wind up teaching in Brussels?
Oh,
was it online, or were you actually there?
No, I used to travel six times a year before the pandemic, and then it was online through the pandemic. It was a strange coincidence of being in Panama, meeting somebody from Brussels there, one thing led to another. I had just sort of finished this stint at Hopkins, and they were interested in doing having graduate students participate in global education and development projects. So I guess I came around at the right time.
Right time, right place, right guy. I got to tell you, that's terrific, Fred. And I have to tell you, Teachers Without Borders, and I hope everybody goes over there, teacherswithoutborders.com. It's a it's a lovely organization is all I can tell you. You should be so proud of yourself for starting it. So before we talk about your book, tell me about and tell everybody about Teachers Without Borders, how you started it, what's going on. Be proud. Brag a lot. Go ahead. Go.
Oh, it's not going to be easy.
Brag
well,
away.
You know, the millennium was changing. I was a little bored as a high school principal. The Battle of
Seattle
where
was that?
Going on.
Where was that?
Oh, that was here in Seattle. Where I live, it was called the Bush School, wonderful school. But, you know, with globalism and the Battle of Seattle and, you know, the kind of digital haves and have-nots and coming from an international family, I thought it was the time to jump into this. And my wife calls this a 23-year manic episode, you know, because you fall in love with something, you don't have the safety net. I did it because I wanted to connect teachers to information and each other to close the education divide, and it would be free, and that I think brains are evenly distributed around the world, and education's not, so let's depend upon those brains, to help each other, because, you know, if you wait for an act of Congress, so to speak. It's not going to happen. So
yeah, good luck.
Act from conscience instead, right?
That's a good way to put it. Not Congress, conscience. I love it. Thank you, Fred. It's good.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I just, you throw yourself out there. What's interesting is that it's not a kind of drive-by, best from the West, good for the rest, parachute in kind of organization. It's all based on, local leadership, capacity building. If the brains are there, then, you don't need to show up, ta-da, that you've got all the answers. People around the world don't need answers as much as they need friends and colleagues. And so, go ahead.
You're exactly right. I'm going to say something to you, and you're being very modest, okay, because starting something that has won all those wonderful prizes and is in 171 countries and is doing great deeds, it's so good that on your advisory team, and I want to make a point of this, is the amazing Jane Goodall, This is not something taken lightly, okay? You're a modest guy, but what you've done obviously is extremely important. And I just wanted to make sure you know that. There's a lot of teachers listening, a lot of educators listening, and they're going to go, wow, this is really something. We also hear about Doctors Without Borders, that wonderful organization, okay? But you said it on the website that, teachers are the largest professional group in the world, all right? And to get them together and working together, because education has to be global. Don't be so modest, my friend. You get a lot of credit for this.
Well,
I really mean
stories
it.
In the, thank you. Thanks, Larry.
You're
the
welcome.
The stories in the book are about, the struggle of putting together an organization. But, the stories are highlighting people who are making change in the small places and that aren't recognized. And so, the book title, for instance, comes from Eleanor, apropos for certainly your wonderful organization is, she writes, where do human rights come from? They come from, the small places. And if, she continues to say, if they don't have, meaning there, then they won't have meaning anywhere. So the idea is that, they're not on any maps of the world. I wanted to not necessarily give voice to the voiceless, but show my colleagues and fellow teachers that we're really the central protagonists in the global change-making space. And that we know who's sick or missing or orphaned by AIDS, or COVID or at risk for human trafficking. And so, we have our ear to the ground. We're a development arm in everybody's backyard. And so, we don't need necessarily, bake sales and award shows and Hallmark cards. We need a voice at the table. And so these voices generally aren't heard, but there's so much creativity and will and sort of cultural sense that no one from the outside could ever do the kinds of projects that, these folks do. And we're just there as sort of traffic cop and cheerleader and connector.
Fred, I got to ask you, this is something I found all over the place, and you know this, certainly. You've been an educator long enough, and in America long enough. Teachers are always getting bashed, especially these days. Education's getting bashed, and then you can carry that. All over the world, there are more teachers than any other profession, okay? But it's always a struggle to educate, and I know you do a lot of work in Africa. And especially in Africa, they're a very undereducated population. They're not stupid. They're just undereducated. We can't get there. And what's the reason for that? There doesn't want to educate everybody. Okay? Yet we always have the same problem. It's a time and time and time and time again. Fred, just talk about it. We're going to talk about some of your agents for change, but why has this been happening for 55,000 years?
Well, you know, just the old adage, it sounds a little trite when I say it, but, you know, the old slave holders used to say, don't teach a slave to read, you know, because they'll get some ideas. And for me, I think that, you know, we have this United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, and there's a new report that says, you know, you really can't make change in health and economic development unless you make this change in education, right? You can't teach, you know, and I think that you can't teach, you can't be healthy unless you learn how to be healthy, and you can't learn unless you are healthy. So everything is connected. But education, for some people, you know, some people, it's always tied to economic development. So, and then, you know, sort of trickle down. And I'm saying we reverse that, and education is the, you know, is the engine of economic development. But, you know, I'm in a lot of ministers of education office, and, you know, they are beholden to their president and the tyranny of the urgent, you know. And I say, let's spend time dealing with the urgency of tyranny, you know, because if you don't educate your people, your country will fail. And in the countries struggling, I'm particularly concerned, certainly about, you know, stuff in the Middle East, but also, you know, I have close colleagues in Haiti. As Haiti devolves, you know, into this gang stuff, you know, the schools just stop. And Haiti.
Well, that's what. By the way, that's what's happened, as everybody well knows. That's what's happened in Gaza.
Yes.
Okay, with the war going on there, and I'm sure in Ukraine as well. Okay, and we can go to other hot spots in the world, and who suffers? The kids. It's just terrible.
If you've got a moment, I'll tell you a story about one of my grad students who did. Okay, so one of my grad students, his name is Simba. He's a Zimbabwean guy. You know, when we're starting,
I believe that would make him a lion. Am I right? That would make him a lion, isn't Simba?
Yeah. He says, he says. Anyway, Simba's a, you know, sweet guy. He was in my grad school class in Brussels. And 2 days before, you know, well, 2 days into the war, you know, I start my class for the spring term. And it was, you know, everybody's from different countries there. It's an international program. And, you know, we'll call the university DUB for short, you know. And at DUB, you know, they're all getting their graduate degrees in education, and they'll go return to their countries. And to a person, you know, they talk about the low priority in education in the particularly struggling countries. So here's a Zimbabwean guy, and we're just traumatized about the, you know, the war against Ukraine. I have Russian students, I have Ukrainian students, you know, and they don't know what to do. And it was a really traumatic class. So 2 weeks later, you know, Simba calls me and he says, hey, Prof, you know, I've got an idea. I won't do this if you say no, which is, you know, a slimy way of his saying, hey, Prof, say yes. And he says, I want to walk from Brussels across, you know, Germany to Poland to raise money and awareness of refugees and education in emergencies. And, you know, of course, I'm saying, what? I mean, Simba. He says, here's the thing. I'm, you know, an African, and we always are associated, you know, war, famine, disease, you know, it's always this, that. But I want to show that we have, you know, courage, brains, you know, and a heart. And they're walking away from their country to escape. I want to walk towards them. And I want to show that an African, you know, is you know, working for them. And that kind of sort of magnanimity of spirit, you know, shows that the power of education change in the poorest countries comes from within, if we can only mobilize the teaching force.
First of all, that's a beautiful story. And by the way, did he make the walk? Or where are we on the walk?
He made the walk. He made the walk. The entire class jumped in on this. I kind of bombed out my curriculum to work around it. They, you know, logistics people, and people started to walk with him. He was like a Zimbabwean Pied Piper, you know,
sure.
And kids and mayors of cities and, you know, and he learned as he walked across Germany, you know, more about the Holocaust than I think one would imagine going into certain cities. And in West Germany, very much, you know, welcomed, and he got the creeps in East Germany, you know, as things have moved, you know, more and more to the right. But, you know, every day we talked, and every day he journaled. And, you know, I have his journal at another site called, you know, walkthepeacetalk.net, and you could read his journal. But he's just a, you know, these are the kinds of people we want to attract that have that kind of passionate feeling and need friends to help them on their journey to make social change.
And we have to do it. And teachers, you know, the obvious, I'm going to say the obvious now, such strong believers in education, they really have to advocate for it worldwide. And I have a question for you. Call your group, if I may, Teachers Without Borders. But I want you to explain that, but I'm just going to say it from my point of view. Doctors Without Borders asks physicians to go all over the world to help doctors wherever they are needed, okay? With Teachers Without Borders, are you advocating that, I'm just going to use American teachers, Canadian teachers, whatever, should go to the foreign countries to teach, or do you want more of the, rather than the people, do you want the ideas to exchange? Maybe that's the best
yes.
way to ask.
I mean,
yeah.
you answered,
talk
you
about
answered
that.
It perfectly. Yeah,
yeah
sure. You know, I was in touch with Doctors Without Borders from the very beginning, first of all, to ask for permission to use their name. Interestingly enough, at that time, they were suing Lawyers Without Borders because they didn't use their name. And in those conversations, I said, it's really going to be a different model. But the Without Borders notion is that we're a global community. I'm not someone, you know, I always get this question about, well, we need borders, you know, and all that. I'm talking about the sort of universal sense that teaching and learning is a global enterprise, that education is global, climate change is global, we all know that public health is global, you know, and so we have this obligation to share our wisdom. And so the sharing of wisdom and the identification of local leaders, so for years and years, once in a while we'd have projects where I would select some folks, you know, to go. But it is just and COVID, you know, sort of put an end to that, but we didn't need it anyway. You know, the internet is enabled. Certainly, you know, leaders aren't born or made, just like this debate we have about teachers, you know, if they're born or made. I don't really care about that. I am interested in leaders who show up. And when we had, you know, an earthquake in China, right after I finished a big program there with teachers, you know, in science inquiry methods, I was, you know, the earthquake, I mean, Larry, we lost teachers, buildings. I mean, it was the worst. I looked into the network to find someone who did something in earthquake science and safety and, you know, found this, you know, woman from Iran and who worked in Tajikistan and had a curriculum. And that went back to China and that went to Haiti and to Russia and to Afghanistan and, you know, Tajikistan. So, you know, those ideas, as you said, are the ones that need to flourish. That's why we're very much a kind of Creative Commons house.
Right.
You know, where those ideas are shared, yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted to make that point because I want people to go over to the website, but the idea is not for a teacher to say, oh, well, now I'm going to go over to a Tajikistan and teach. That's not what this is. This is the sharing of ideas. They want to go to Tajikistan or whatever, that's fine. Okay, that's great. But that's not what this is. This is an ongoing exchange of ideas that really does make a difference. You told the story about your Zimbabwean student. What are the other ones? What have you discovered about all this? Is you talk to educators, and you must be in touch with educators all over the world. What's the thing you're constantly hearing, and what's the, if I may, the common problem, the common challenge that they all face? Okay, where is
it? Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of them talk to us about policy in teacher development. Mm. They often say that, you know, you're going to say something.
No, I was reacting to what you said because you talked about teacher development. That's something that's always on my mind here. I just have to say this because I always feel that here in the States, teacher training lags behind what's going on in the classrooms. Okay, and that's not good. Okay?
It has
to change. And it just when you just said that a few minutes ago about teacher development, I just blurted it out, you know, to myself. I probably said it into the mic, you know, you're right. Okay, something really has to change and change hugely. That's the common problem. So what are you hearing? If I may continue, I didn't mean to interrupt your thought.
Oh, sure. So, I mean, in policy, we're talking about, you know, some national policies. But for instance, in the whole issue of reading these days, which, you know, the science of reading is really getting embraced around the world. But the policies are this sort of recalcitrant or stubborn, you know, adherence to how it used to be done. So it doesn't, so the science of reading really accelerates change. I'm working with, you know, my mentor, her family runs actually the largest school in the world. You could look it up in, you know, a Guinness Book of World Records.
There's
61,300 Montessori kids running around in Lucknow, India. And, you know, she is working on, you know, a massive, you know, reading, you know, literacy, you know, numeracy and literacy programs that are accelerated, low cost, you know, very easy to do, locally, you know, adaptable. And, you know, she is a big shot, and she's spending all her time trying to get people to see the evidence and make changes in their policy. In other countries, teachers are simply not being paid, but they stay in the classroom, you know, just they show up. You know, there are organizations and international unions out there protecting their rights, and they have a role to play. If we don't do that, we don't have the capacity to do that. So we rely on these teacher networks. You know, when you're not getting support, you have to get support. And it's both the most social profession and the most lonely. I think people just ask for help from their colleagues. And they, you know, they get it. It's not easy to manage sometimes. And, you know, we don't manage all these discussion boards because we're really focused on the individuals in particular countries that really rise to the fore. We don't pick countries who say, look, I've been reading your stuff and I want to do X, Y, and Z. Could you help me with this? So it's very personal. And just as teachers really flourish when they have good mentors, you know, we don't, you know, automate anything. We find the people that show up and support them to do their job. We're the people, you know, behind them with the shovel, you know, behind the elephant with the shovel.
And Fred,
we want to remove the barriers.
Behind them with the shovel. I love that. And, you know, as you look at countries, and everybody always talks about Finland and Singapore, you know, as you know, you're working internationally, if I may, you know, a lot of people. Look at this. You know, they are the prime example, so to speak, of kids doing academically perfect and how socially the government works with them and really moves the needle forward and all that sort of thing. We can learn a lot from other countries as well. If you had some, you know, you talked about the lady, the two people, one in India, one in Tajikistan, do you find that what can America learn from the other countries? We always think of ourselves as giving everybody else the great ideas. Okay, the information flows that way. Okay, but we need to have the information flow both ways. And I bet in your opinion too, but certainly in mine. Okay, and what can we learn from teachers in other countries?
Well, there's a million things. I mean, and really, this is a fabulous question. You know, and the source of you know, great richness. First of all, the acknowledgement, you know, it's so arrogant to think that we can't learn from others, you know.
Agreed.
How does, for instance, the community address its, let's say it's Flint, you know, Michigan, and, you know, the water crisis.
Oh, God.
There. I think of all the projects, you know, out there that teachers have done to address local public health issues. And some of them have to do, you know, with mobilizing people who are not necessarily in education. So we're talking about, you know, the plumber. You know, this is what a teacher in a developing country would do. She or he would say, mobilize the plumbers, the barbers, the churches, integrate, you know, education into the, you know, doctor's visits, social campaigns. If educators were addressing these issues, you know, educators in developing countries always see things as not an education issue alone. They see it as a, you know, 360-degree community-oriented enterprise. And we rarely see this. So they solicit the help of people you wouldn't imagine would have any role to play. And what's really interesting, Larry, is like the first day I started Teachers Without Borders, I was at a big fancy meeting I got, you know, lucky and got into. And I asked a UN staffer a kind of bizarre question, but I said, you know, could you define a teacher? And the guy said to me, a teacher is anyone with valuable information to share. Hmm. And now, what does that mean? It doesn't necessarily mean a credentialed teacher or the, you know, goes, it's a village elder. It could be anyone with valuable information to share. So in the book, I talk about a forklift driver and a taxi driver. I have a separate chapter for each about what they have to share. And I would think that everybody who has valuable information to share is a teacher. Now, that, you know, that may, some people may feel offended, like, you know, that demeans the profession. No, I don't think it's it's not like you don't need a credential. I'm saying you need a good training to become a teacher.
You're saying is that educators, professional educators, need to tap into the community. The community is an invaluable resource, and educators in other countries who don't have the full resources that an American educator might have can understand that there's resources existed out there that are available to them. And if I may take what you're saying and take it that much further, to me, that's what you're saying. The resources are never ending if we learn how to tap into them. And sometimes you can do it.
Right. I was in a country, this is also another part of India, where teachers had problems, because they didn't have the science textbooks. But they had some knowledge of science. So one of them decided to work with the person who manages the local playground. And in the playground was, you know, the merry-go-round and the swings. And someone had been doing a project where the kids on the merry-go-round were going around and around, but, you know, there was a drill underneath drilling for water. So the swings, you know, they were, you know, merry-go-round was centrifugal force. The swings were, you know, the transfer of energy. And so it's this innate creativity where if you don't have the information you need, you solicit it locally, and it's there. It's all in your backyard, and that's what lots of people need to learn here, that you don't need the big – now, look, I'm a big advocate for more money for teachers, for their salaries.
Of course.
For their
classrooms, you're not saying, yeah.
And that,
yeah.
Right. But that's what they have – they haven't had much, so they create a richness from the resources in their local community.
Well, it's amazing. Fred, you what you've done is amazing. I'm going to have you come back on to the show, maybe bring some teachers with you, even from other countries.
Yeah.
I would love it. Okay?
Sure.
The book,
absolutely, Larry.
I hope you would come back on because I just love talking to you. The book is In the Small Places. It has its own website. I have it linked in the smallplaces.com from Teachers Without Borders, teacherswithoutborders.org, and that's Fred Mednick's organization. Dr. Fred has been our guest. Fred, thank you. You're amazing.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks so much.
You're amazing. I hope we can do more together, okay?
All right. Yeah, you too.
Thank you, my friend.
Take care.
Okay?
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Thanks, Fred. Okay.
Thanks.
Wow. Fred's amazing. That's all I can say. Check this out. Okay? We'll archive over at ace-ed.org, and I hope you share it with a lot of people. I'm Larry Jacobs, pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening, and everybody has to have a great day. It is springtime now.